a good bit to cover tonight, so I want to make my opening remarks brief. But I want to thank you for the opportunity with you this week and for your interest in this topic. I've enjoyed being here. You paid good attention. I think you picked a good topic of focus. We're not all in the midst of raising children, but it is surely an important thing and one we all have an interest in. I've enjoyed being in the home of Keith, Renee, and Hannah, and I feel like I've known them for longer than 4 days, but I haven't. It's just been 4 days, but it's been a pleasure to be with them, and it's been good here to be with you, and thank you for the good food. I'm reminded of what I miss about North Alabama. I like Pennsylvania. I love Pennsylvania, but the food is not as good as North Alabama. If this is recorded on a website, I will qualify for this. There's some very good cooks in Pennsylvania who happen to be from North Alabama. But there's good cooks up there. But just there's something I always enjoy about being back in this area, good food. You've been kind and hospitable, and thank you for everything. Let's go ahead and get into our concluding lesson tonight. We ended last night with the point, the mistake of when parents think if we don't allow this, they might rebel and leave the church. So I want to say one more thing about that before moving on. Once the parent is thinking in that way, can you see the problem? There's already been a lack of training preceding that. If it gets to the point where a child being prohibited from doing something that's not a good idea or outright immoral, and they just resent their parents' wisdom and direction on that, there's already a rebellious attitude there that shouldn't be. And for then the parent to cave, who's winning there? Let's not let good be overcome of evil. Let's overcome evil with good. Point number 14. Oh, and on that, let me say this about attire and clothing. The world sets standards. There's a lot of people in the fashion industry that design clothing to be seductive and revealing. I want to give you just a couple of illustrations. Remember that in the New Testament, Paul writes, women adorn yourselves in what? Modest apparel. Some fences are meant for privacy and some are meant for showing off. If somebody wants a privacy fence, it can be a very attractive fence. It might be redwood or cedar or brick or whatever, but it's there to what? Keep something private. Here's a millionaire with a mansion, and what kind of fence does he want out front, perhaps? A little bit of flimsy wrought iron decorative stuff where everybody can see through it to see his gorgeous mansion, right? There's different kinds of packaging. When you give somebody a birthday present, you don't wrap it in cellophane, because then you can see what it is. You wrap it in something that covers up, so they don't see what's underneath. When you buy Oscar Mayer bacon, what's the wrapper like? They're wanting to show you the bacon. Clothes are kind of like that. Some clothes are meant to cover up. You can have an attractive privacy fence. You can have attractive wrapping on a birthday present. Some clothes are for showing off the bacon. Don't wear those clothes. Just because everybody else is, people of God, that's not the thing to be doing. All right, number 14, the mistake of assuming cultural norms. How many of you have heard, of you that aren't parents yet, how many of you have heard of the terrible twos? You know, it's like everybody's heard of the terrible twos. And so sometimes somebody has a child, they are not training the child, and so the child is behaving how? Terribly. And their friends say, oh, it's the terrible twos. A lot of you have had two-year-olds that are just wonderful, right? Twos don't have to be terrible. The rebellious teens. Oh, well, they're teenagers. That's the way they're going to do. I remember talking to a young man one time who went on to have problems and more problems. I remember trying to talk to him in high school because I could tell he had an ego problem. And he said, well, I'm a teenager. Of course I have an ego. And, of course, then later his ego got him into trouble, you know, again and again. Was Timothy a rebellious teen? I don't know how Timothy was, but if you do some of the math, if the general assumption that Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy after his first Roman imprisonment, I'm not sure that that has to be the case, but this general was thought. If that's so, then it's very striking. Paul picked up Timothy in the late 40s. If Timothy is written in the 60s, early 60s, then when he says, don't let anybody despise your youth, if Timothy's a youth still in the 60s, what was he back in the 40s, late 40s? Could have easily been a teenager. Josiah, who at age 16 set his heart to serve God. Do teenagers have to be rebellious? Don't accept cultural norms. Because you know what? It's culturally common for teenagers to be rebellious. It's also common for them to grow up into ungodly adults that are going to go to hell. It's not our job to settle for what's culturally common. Jesus said in Matthew 6, be not like them. Don't be fashioned according to the world. Wise parenting and consideration of the trajectory. Your home doesn't have to only make rules that says, well, you can't do that because the Bible says it's a sin. And if Dad, I want to do this. Mom, I want to do this. I want to wear this. I want to go here. I want to do that. Well, I don't see a verse that says you exactly can't do that, so yes, you can. Don't run your home like that. The Bible gives us rules, but it also gives us principles. And in your home, you have the right, judging your own children, dealing with your own children and the culture you live in, the different things that are going on, to know what's a good idea and a bad idea. Something that might be a good idea in one generation could be a bad idea in another generation. You have to have some wisdom. But look at this. I like Jonadab in Jeremiah chapter 35. And he's different than Lot. Let's give two examples here. Did the covenant with Noah or any instructions to Abraham, did it say that you can't choose land down near the Dead Sea and Sodom and Gomorrah here? Nope. And you know what? Maybe 100 years before, or 200 years before, or 200 years later, there might have been some fine people down there. But at that particular time, what were the people like down there? Did Lot think about what the people were like? Or did he think, hey, there's some good land? Now, Paul talks about, when he writes to Corinthians, all things are lawful, not all things edify. There can be some things that might conceivably be a good idea, but they're not necessarily a good idea right here, right now, for this child, at this age, etc. He put himself in a bad situation. Jonadab. Jeremiah chapter 35, God says, call the Rechabites. Bring them in here to Jerusalem, and then set some wine in front of them. Brought the Rechabites in and said, now tell them to drink the wine. The Rechabites said, no. No, our father Jonadab said, we're not going to live in houses, we're not going to live in the cities, we're going to live in tents, we're not going to drink wine. That's what we're going to do. That was a man that had a lot of influence over his family. He valued the shepherding and the farm life. He valued just staying away from wine altogether, and it would range in its contents at different times. But he just, this is what we're going to do as our family. Don't be afraid to have some family rules. Let's take this for example. Was television probably pretty innocent in 1957? Is television very innocent right now? I've heard one brother talk about when he was preaching back in the 50s, his mom and dad didn't have a TV. They didn't want a TV. And he would go somewhere for the summer and watch TV. And there was a family there that would put him up. And so it was a chance to get to watch TV. And he said it would go on until there was maybe some variety show or something. They started doing some dancing. And the woman in the house said, "Oh, isn't that horrible?" And they turned it off. He said the next summer, same type of thing would happen, and the mother would say, "Oh, isn't that horrible?" And they left it on. The next summer, something would come on inappropriate, and they didn't even bother to say, "Isn't that horrible?" anymore. You know, and they just kept watching. Let's think about the trajectory. You might have a youngster that, say, that enjoys a sport or a musical instrument or some other talent. Is anything wrong with that? No. It'd be a great thing. What if you see it becoming too important to them? What did Jesus say to the rich young ruler? Did he tell Zacchaeus he had to give everything away? No. Zacchaeus could handle it. What did he see in the case of the rich young ruler? He couldn't handle it. He told him to give it all away. I've got a little Zach. He's a pretty good little ball player. And he didn't do as well this year, but last year he was in a little program for sixth graders or something, and at the school, we homeschool, but we also use the public school for things like that. And their final night was Wednesday night. But it started at 5, and our services aren't until 7:30, and they were going to have, you know, all sorts of things to do, you know, basketball-wise, and then eat pizza. So I thought, well, we'll go at 5, and we'll let you stay, you know, up to 7-something, and then we'll have to leave. Well, he did a good job. He came in, I think, 3rd in hot shot, and then they started the layup competition. A certain amount of time, you got to go up and do it, come back, go up, back, you know, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, how quickly, and he got them all, and there were a few that tied for first, but he was one of them. And then they had to do a runoff. One of the coaches, a friend of mine, so he knew Zach was going to have to guard, so he got him up there, and he and another boy, you know, did the best again of at least those two. They tied, but there was time to go. And then we left, and he didn't complain at all. He got in the car, and we went. I said, "Zach, I'm proud of how well you did out there, but I'm more proud that when it was time to go to church, you realized it's time to go to services because that's what's more important to us." I said, "If you ever get to where the basketball is more important to you than the Lord, then what do we need to do with the basketball or the banjo or the drum?" You know, when you start seeing the child and there that some movie star or other thing or band is everything to them, and they've got them all over their walls, and they're not really interested in the Lord or Peter or Paul or Abraham, guess what? They're on the wrong trajectory. You need to get that changed. All right, I spent longer on that than I meant to. I need to speed up here. Going in defense, the mistake of going into defense mode when our children are wrong. Some of you work in the public school system, and you've seen these parents, right? Now, that's what I understand is one of the things that's changed in the public school system over the generations. Used to, if you got in trouble at school, where were you also going to be in trouble? At home. And there's still parents like that, but there's a bunch of parents, too. You get in trouble at school, and then the parents are complaining. Why aren't you operating a better classroom? Why aren't you having, you know, where things like this don't happen? Why not this? Why not? Oh, it couldn't have been my child. No, it must have been. You must have done something to him. And they just go into defense mode automatically when their children are in trouble. You ever seen parents like that? Have any of us ever acted like that? Not my child. Somebody offers some criticism. I appreciate it when people, you know, I have people come up and you know, they'll say, "Scott, I need to let you know, the little boy during Bible class, he wouldn't stay in his seat, he's crawling under the table." I say, "Thank you." You know, I don't go, couldn't have been my child. Well, yeah, it was. You know, she's got eyes. She knows who it was. Why did you make him go under the table? She didn't make him go under the table. That's doing me a favor, because I only see him when he's around me. Do we want to know what they're doing when we're not around them? Yeah, those people are doing us favors. But if you go into defense mode when our children are wrong, and they're going to be wrong. We're wrong sometimes. Daddy's wrong sometimes. Mama's wrong sometimes. Little boys and little girls are wrong sometimes. If you get into defending, denying, redirecting blame, remember what Paul said in 1 Timothy 5:21? Do everything without partiality. Isaiah 5:20, woe to them that call evil and good evil. If you start a pattern of bailing out, don't be surprised when they come to expect it in a very legal and financial sense. Mom, I'm in jail. Bail me out. The rod and proof bring wisdom. A child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Correct your son, he'll give you comfort. He will delight your soul. Proverbs 29, 15 through 17. Mistake number 16, focusing on home income over home outcome. You remember when we showed the two houses at the beginning of our study on Sunday? One was a rare, very rude log cabin that's thought to be perhaps where Abraham Lincoln was born. The other was a fine-looking house where John Wilkes Booth grew up. We've got, up where I'm at, they're regularly been building new schools and property taxes have been through the roof. There's a place in Pennsylvania where people are paying $1,000 a month in property taxes. It's just crazy. And a lot of it has to do with where they're about to tear down what looks to me to be a good school in Gettysburg and build another. The claim oftentimes is, this is for the children. I think sometimes it's for the administrators and some other things like that. Sometimes when we're spending all of our focus on making money and buying toys and gadgets and expensive vacations and everything else, oh, it's for our children. Sometimes it's for us. What do our children need? Our children need training. Love, joy, correction, security, mom, dad, family, God. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. Proverbs 15:17. It's the home, not the house. The family, not the stuff. Washington, D.C. area has all these big McMansions that were just built, you know, before the housing bubble thing. Huge, huge, huge. And I described this one way, and a fellow who used to work in Washington, D.C. said, that's right, how it is down there. It was huge homes with nobody home. Both parents working full-time, going back and forth, you know, and commuting and everything. Kids, you know, going off and then being dropped off and stuff. Do you realize that a lot of teen pregnancies occur between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the afternoon? According to statistics and science. Children need parents. It's the home, not the house, the family, not the stuff. If you haven't known, how many of you have known, I want to, by show of hands, how many of you have known people, perhaps yourself or family members, who even in their adult life were deeply scarred because of growing up in a dysfunctional home? Maybe it was an alcoholic father or abusive mother or just the psychological insecurity of just ungodly home. How many of you have known people who in their adult life have really had trouble because of growing up in a dysfunctional home? How many of you have known people who in their adult life just had deep emotional problems and psychological scars because they grew up in a house with avocado washer, white dryer, shag carpeting, Oh, it's just terrible. You know, why can't you hold a job? Why can't you, you know, why do you have to see the psychiatrist every week? Why did, well, you just don't know the home I grew up in. And the carpet was out of date. You know, it was not a very, it was a 50s split level. It was, there was a broken window that had a piece of duct tape on it. A lot of people grew up in those homes. You're not pretty fine people. A lot of people grew up in those homes. It was also a dysfunctional thing. The point is, it's not the house, it's the home. You can have a beautiful house and a beautiful home. Or you can have, there's different combinations. But don't sacrifice the home for the house. Job probably had a nice house, but where was he centered? In God. Do our homes reflect scriptural priorities or cultural priorities? Older women, train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, kind, being in subjection to their own husbands. All of this that we're about to go through could almost be several lessons in one. I don't have time to go into detail. Let me just mention these, and Heath might choose to touch on some of these things in some upcoming lessons if he hasn't, or some of the others haven't already covered this type of thing. But don't underestimate the threats that are out there. There's a lot. Corruption from the entertainment media. Corruption from the internet. Pornography. Just horrendous damage being done. Sexual offenders, predators, old and young. We do not live in a world that's as safe as it used to be. Certain educational agendas. Relativism, promotion of homosexuality, evolution. There was a study done just last week. Sociologist, University of Michigan, I believe it was. I don't know if they used taxpayer money or not. But the study, the headline in Detroit News read, "Gay Marriage Could Save Lives." It was based on the sociologist study. Here's what it said. In their study, they discovered that they saw the fact that men and women that were married to each other had fewer health problems than unmarried homosexuals. That was the statistic. In their study, they found out that a man and a woman, two opposite sexes, married to each other, had fewer health problems than these two homosexuals living together. The conclusion? Marriage is healthy, you know. And so if we would let homosexuals get married, then they'd be healthier probably. I suggested, I posted it on a thing on the internet that said, I said, always interested in seeing more tax money wasted. I suggested another study that married people of opposite gender tend to be more successful at getting pregnant than homosexuals. And perhaps if we would allow them to get married, then that would also increase their odds of conceiving as well. But there's a certain agendas, and you're not going to see as much of it in the school system, probably in Coleman, Alabama, and some other places, but you're probably going to see more of it over time. And between evolution and different things, some of the books like Two Kings, and there was a father in Massachusetts who was arrested. His little boy came home with a book, King and King. There was a story, little children's storybook about a little prince, and the king brings in princesses, and he's not interested in them. And then there's a prince, and then at the end they kiss and pick up their little foot and stuff. This is a child's book, and they're giving it to, it was like a kindergartner or a first grade. And the parents said, "When you're doing this stuff, you tell me, and we'll keep him home or put him in a different activity that day." They said, "This is not a parental notification issue." He said, "This is my child. I'm telling you, I don't want my child in this. This is not a parental notification issue." He said, "I want to be notified. I don't want my child." He said, "I'm not leaving until this is satisfied." So they called the police, and he was arrested and taken away in handcuffs. Be aware of some of the threats out there. Presuming medical solutions for behavioral issues. There's people that need medication. There's people, there may be people here in this audience who are alive because of prescription medication that saved their life or have a health issue that they need a medication. But the fact also is, anybody familiar with it knows that in this country there's a lot of over-medication. And we're getting to the point where we want to medicate everything for behavior as well. Let me suggest something to you. The schools that are putting out the doctors and all that, do you suppose those are evolutionary-based or biblically-based? Evolutionary-based. According to the theory of evolution, are you designed for a purpose? No. You are an accidental arrangement of chemicals. There are some chemicals that turned into a first cell and it replicated, and then cells that didn't have as good a chemical combination died off, and cells with a better combination of chemicals kept going, and then some of them started swimming and climbing and then walking around, and there you are. So if you've got problems, what's assumed to be the problem? You don't have the right chemicals in you. And they may even do some tests sometimes. Well, this person tends to be this or that. Well, which is cause and which is an effect? You know, there's all kinds of chemicals that go back and forth in the brain, and some of that is adrenaline is an amazing thing. And people, when their adrenaline gets going, they can do things that they might not other times be able to do. But that adrenaline is a response to stimulus, isn't it? And what's going on with it? Be careful about buying in to... I remember when Adam was in first grade, and we went to see the teacher. And she said, well, have you taken him to see the doctor? You know, he talks, you know, he wiggles, he falls out of his chair. I had a friend of mine, she said, she took her son in and to see the doctor and said, what's that? And he was looking at something, what's that? What's that do? What's that? Within a few minutes, he said, he's got ADHD. She gave a prescription for Ritalin. She gave it to him and kind of, and she said, I'm not doing that anymore. I was talking to a school teacher in Atlanta because, you know what? Part of it's behavior and training. If you don't train people, we've got a lot of people, adults too, that don't have much of an attention span anymore, because even how do we get entertainment and news? When's the last time you saw a really, truly in-depth news report? You know, it's like, choo. Back in the Lincoln-Douglas debates, people would sit there and listen for like 3 hours. But, and part of it's training, but part of it, I don't think God made little boys to just sit like this for hour after hour. You know, listening to numbers and dates and words and stuff. There was one school where they separated the boys and the girls, and this was on the NBC affiliate up in Pennsylvania, and the boys weren't doing as well. They separated the girls from the boys, and they started having the boys do hands-on stuff. Their grades went up. There was a study done with people on depression that were depressed, and they gave half of them medication, half of them they put on an exercise program. Guess what? Getting some physical exercise worked just as well as taking the drugs. But this woman, and I was pointing out, you know, a lot of the things, it's interesting, if you go to the CDC site and look up the disease, ADHD, it tells you there's no biological marker for this. It's not like there's a blood test. It's diagnosed by symptoms. And it says you don't try to diagnose it. Let a doctor diagnose it. But you read some of the symptoms, and they're things like this. Doesn't like to do things that take a lot of mental effort for a long period of time. Anybody here guilty of that? Forgets things. You know, and a lot of it was just boys. I talked to one school or teacher in Atlanta. She said, yeah, I get these forms, and you have to mark, yep, he does that, he does that. She says, it's my, part of my job. I have to say, yeah, they do that, but I just want to write on there, he's a boy. Don't buy in to that. feminism, blurring of gender roles, declining standards of self-responsibility, dress code, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have time to talk about this one except to just say this. And let me just say a little bit about it. Luke chapter 15, the prodigal son. Is there a birth order there? It's not the most important part of the story, but it's kind of interesting that it's mentioned. Which child stayed at home and was working in the field, and which child wanted to go party? The younger child was the one that did it. I remember talking one time to a mother, and I knew her daughter was responsible, nice family, nice home, they had a good business, et cetera, et cetera. The son lived over the garage and smoked pot and didn't have a job, as I recall. And as he was describing the situation, I said, "Is he the youngest?" And she went, "How'd you know? Have you seen that pattern? It's not always so. It's not always so. But there's a tendency that's easy to happen. Have you ever seen this in your own family or other families? Child number one, a lot is expected out of them. The baby, not much is expected. Have you ever seen that pattern? Let me suggest a few reasons for that. You see it in the prodigal son story. One is just time. When you had your first baby, how much of your parenting time could be devoted to that child? All of it. By the time we get number six, how much of our parenting time is on the sixth one? More than on the first one. Percentage-wise, him compared to the first, of course. But he can't get as much time because there's other children, right? Here's some other things. Pacifier illustration. Moms, I want you to think back to your first baby. The pacifier. The first time the pacifier fell on the ground. What did you do? Oh, no. You know, you got that thing, you probably sterilized it in hot water, right? Because, oh, the germs, the bacteria, the dogs have walked across. Oh, you know, you might have just throw that one out. You know, at the baby shower, we got a bunch. Just throw that one away. And then, after a while, you start knowing that the baby was more resilient than you realize. You know, you see him licking the dog's mouth. You see him, you know, eating dirt out of the plant. You see him, you know, picking up gum from the bottom of a chair or something. I saw a little boy one time. I was having some studies at the jail, and it got to be, it was two sections of jail, so I had another preacher go with me, and we're both going. One time we went there to hopefully meet one of the prisoners. He had his little boy with him, and we're right here is the door, you know, where you have to be buzzed in. This area is where the public can come up to the window. All the prisoners come through here on their way to court every day. I turn around, his little boy is licking the floor. Okay. He's fine and healthy today. So, moms, by child number two, were you panicking as much with the pacifier, or was cold water good enough? Child number three. Child number four, let the dog lick it off. You know, it just, because you realize, oh, wasn't that important? And we tend to do the same thing with manners and correction. Child number one. No, you have to say please. You have to share. You have to say thank you. You have to obey. You have, and then it turned out to be a good kid. And we go, oh, that wasn't so hard. So then we, you see, here's the difference. The first child didn't live because we sterilized the pacifier. The first child was responsible and polite because we trained them. The second one did. Also, firstborn is born into a world of adults. So as he looks around, who's he got to mimic? The lastborn is born into a world where there's kids around. And so there's a little bit different role power. And one more. Moms, dads, do you remember your first baby? Do you remember how eager you were for every... Do you remember the calendar? Did you mark first tooth, first smile, first, you know, all those little things? I hope my younger kids never ask me, you know, where their baby book is because they don't have one. But, you know, that first one, it's like, did he smile? Did he smile? No, that wasn't a smile.
He said a word. He said, you know, you can't wait for it to happen, right?
And then you remember when your last baby came along? And you're like, oh, I hope he doesn't grow up too quick. And sometimes mama wants to keep him a baby. That's not potty training yet. The doctor's kind of cute. Let him. Maybe that doesn't matter on a few of the baby things. But when he's 32 and he's living in the garage and he doesn't have a job and he's smoking pot, it's not cute anymore. And what do those moms say when some of the firstborn or middleborn or whatever, when some of the older kids say, why did you buy him a car? Why do you let him? Why did you bail him out? What does she say? Don't talk about my baby. First-born children can be rotten too. Youngest-born can be wonderful people when they're trained. Don't shortchange your youngest by lowering the bar. Keep giving them the training that they need. All right. What I want to finish with is some thoughts for young people in particular. The Bible says in Ecclesiastes, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. First thing we want to mention is in relationship to home, as long as you're in the home, you need to remember what the Bible says in Ephesians 6. Let's turn and read that. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. Your parents don't know everything. Teenagers tend to go through a cycle where they think their parents know everything. And then they decide they don't know everything. And then they kind of decide, boy, they don't know much at all. And then they start making some stupid mistakes themselves. And they start really, oh, wow, mom and dad really knew what they were talking about. Mark Twain said at 18, his father was a great fool. By 21, he was amazed at how much he had learned. And some of us who are older can recall maybe thinking that about some of our parents. At times, your parents aren't perfect. They'll make some mistakes. And sometimes their ideas might not be the best, but they're your parents. And God said, children, obey your parents. I was talking to a 13-year-old girl one time, and with her mom, they were having difficulty. And I said to the 13-year-old girl, I said, do you think your mom knows what it's like to be 13? And she goes, no. This is very funny. Because you can't get to be a mom without being a 13-year-old girl. You know, unless you're an 11-year-old mom or something. You kind of go through that. I said, she knows what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl. You don't know what it's like to be a 35-year-old mom responsible for a 13-year-old girl. There will be some things. I hope my children do various things better than I've done. But while you're in your parents' home, respect your parents. Not because everything they've said passes your test of whether or not you liked it or it made sense. Respect them because they're your parents. And they have sacrificed for you. And they brought you into this world. And they cleaned up after you threw up as a baby. And they cleaned up after everything else. And they have spent countless hours taking care of you and trying to impart knowledge to you, and God said, listen to them. So do. There will be a point where you don't have to obey your parents, but you still keep honoring your parents. In Mark chapter 7, that whole Corban thing the Jews were doing, that related oftentimes to adults, and Jesus still said we need to what? Honor your father and mother. Several years ago, when I was a child, I would say to my dad, yes, sir. As I got older, I might say, yeah. Then after I got, I don't know, in my 30s or so, maybe late 30s, I got thinking, I thought, I want to say yes, sir, to my dad. And so now when Dad says something, I say, yes, sir. Not because I'm a little boy that has to obey him, but because I respect him. I want to honor him. Luke chapter 15, look at the prodigal son. We've already mentioned him once. I want you to look at something else about him. Luke chapter 15. Teenagers, have you ever said to your mom or dad, I'm 13 years old. I ought to be able to... I'm 15. I ought to be able to... I'm 17. I ought to be able to... What's usually at the end of those sentences? Responsibility or privilege? Usually privilege. I'm 13. I ought to have a smartphone. I'm 14. I shouldn't have a curfew. I'm 15. You know, I should have, you know, a this or a that. I'm 16. I should have a car. I'm 17. I should be able to stay out of... Adulthood is not about you getting to do everything you want to do and having no responsibilities. Adults, can I have an amen on that? When you get, I'm 22, I ought to be able to do anything I want to do. No, you don't get to. Guys, you got to go to work. You got to pay taxes. You got to fill out these crazy forms that are really irritating and stuff. And you got to do this and you got to do that. And the government says you got to do this. And this responsibility says you got to do that. And you have to do this. And there's a lot of stuff you just have to do. It's work. The attitude of the prodigal son is the attitude that sometimes teenagers have. Look at his attitude. Luke chapter 15. Now, this is an amazing parable because most parables, a lot of parables, here's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, right? And usually it's not that much value to look at the earthly story and focus on that part. Like the parable of the sower. Here's the story, and it illustrates this. If you're going into farming, I don't think it pays a whole lot of attention. Well, let me read the parable of the sower, all right? There's some hard ground. There's some thorny ground. You know, you don't read it to know how to farm. But this one's kind of interesting because of the family picture that it shows. And look at it. It illustrates our relationship to God. But look what we've got here. Luke chapter 15. Verse 11, he said, a certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, let me help out more with the household chores. Hey, let me pay, you know, some rent while I'm living here. Let me mow the grass. I'll change the oil. I'm big enough. No. What does he want? He wants all privilege and no responsibility. What does he say? One of your brothers read that. Verse 12. What did he say?
Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his life.
Give it to him. That's not even dead yet. Give it to him. Somebody worked for that. Give it to him. And he takes it, and then what did he do? Not long after that, he went away to a far country. Why? I don't want any of his rules. I want to get far away from him. I don't want his saying, you boys need to go to bed. I don't want his saying, tomorrow we got to work on the back 40. I don't want his saying, you need to quit spending so much silly time on. I'm tired of his rules. I want nothing to do with him except his money. Give me the money. Off he goes. Right? Well, he went and invested it and started a business that he applied himself to and did really well, right? No. His older brother said he wasted the money on drinking and women. Verse 13, he says, he wasted his substance on riotous living. When he had spent everything, there arose a mighty famine in that country and began to be in want. And he ends up feeding pigs. And nobody gave to him. Don't be an enabler. Then he came to the senses. He said, this is pretty stupid.
she realized, I've been wrong. I'm going to go back and tell my father I sinned, and I'm sorry, and I don't deserve to be his son. And the Father, in mercy, gives him more than he deserves. And that's what God offers us. God's given us tremendous blessings. And how many times have you and I and other people wanted all of God's blessings and not his rules? And have we ever gotten ourselves into the pig pen as a result of that? Responsibility gains privilege. So, young people, instead of thinking, I'm 13, I'm 13. I ought to maybe fold the laundry. I'm 13. I ought to pitch on that. I'm maybe 19 or something. So maybe I ought to help out with some of the bills or cook, you know, dinner or do, you know. In other words, I'm old enough to be doing. There's givers and takers. Don't start off life just being a taker. Where am I headed? How do I get there? Path choices. Turn to Proverbs chapter 2. I want you to think about path. I didn't think about this really until about 3 years ago, and it's really interesting, and I want to share it with you. There's so much in the book of Proverbs about paths. Now think about it, and it'll occur to you what didn't occur to me to focus on for a long time. Why? Proverbs talks about crooked paths and straight paths, and it talks about watch your feet on the path. Psalm says, your word is a light unto my path, a light unto my steps. And it talks about the wicked stumbling in the darkness. They don't know where they're going. And keep your foot on there. Don't go to the right, go to the left. Keep your foot on the path. Why do you think there's such an imagery of path in Proverbs? That's how they got places. I want you to think about that for a minute. How did you get here this evening? You didn't take a path. Has anybody here ever walked the Appalachian Trail? The Appalachian Trail goes about 5 miles away from my house. And would you want to walk the Appalachian Trail at night without a light? No, you wouldn't. There's roots, rocks, fallen trees. You will stumble and not know what you stumbled at. The foolish virgins. Why, it's time to go in a few minutes, but what's happened? Their lamps have gone out. They don't live with street lights going up and down a highway. They didn't have a car that you just sit in and you turn on the lights. That's not how they got places. They walked. And if you're going to get where you're going, what do you want to do? You want to walk on a good path. You want to see where you're going. The Bible, Psalms 119-105, says, your word is a light unto my path. Do y'all know that song? It's a good song based on that verse. Listen to some of this from Proverbs with me as we're getting close, winding down here. Proverbs chapter 2. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ears attentive to my wisdom, inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call for insight, raise your voice for understanding, seek it like silver. Young people, if you found out that a pirate buried a chest of gold and silver in your backyard, what would you be doing? You'd be getting a shovel and you'd be digging and digging and digging. Search for wisdom like it's buried treasure. It's worth more than buried treasure. Seek it like silver, search for it as hidden treasures. Then you'll understand the fear of the Lord to find the knowledge of God. The Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. It's a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice, watching over the way of saints. Then you'll understand righteousness, justice, equity, every good path. It talks about in verse 14, those that do evil. Verse 15, for their paths are crooked. Stay away from the wicked woman. It says, verse 18, her house sinks down to death, her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good and keep to the paths of righteousness. Chapter 3, Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths. Go over to chapter 4, verse 10. Hear, my son, accept my words. The years of life, baby Benny, I've taught you in the way of wisdom. I've led you in the paths of righteousness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered. If you run, you will not stumble. Keep hold of instruction. Don't let her go. Guard her. She is your life. Don't enter the path of the wicked. Don't go walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Don't go on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. They cannot sleep unless they have done wrong. They are robbed of sleep unless they have made someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness, drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn. It shines brighter and brighter into the full day. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. If any of you have ever dealt with people, incarcerated people, people in the justice system and such, you've seen this pattern. Like we got a fellow, he's a probation officer and such. One of the things, characteristics of people that fail and fail again, a lot of times they don't realize what they're doing over and over. It's like they keep doing the same stupid, foolish things, and they're blaming everybody else. And working with prisoners, I've seen that they tend to, you know, maybe blame it on the lawyer, or blame it on the victim, or blame it on the police. Until you see where the problem is, you know, you're going to keep having problems. They don't see what they stumble at. I was talking to some young men this afternoon and invited them to come tonight. And I said, for instance, be thinking about this. Because they said, well, they were in their 20s. No, we're not married. We're not planning to get married anytime soon. I said, well, y'all be thinking about this. If you're going to get married. They said, would you like to get married someday? Have kids? And I said, have you got friends, you know, that have been discouraged because, you know, they get a wife and she's a liar and she cheats on them and she betrays them, all that? And they're like, yeah. I said, well, where did they get them? And they're like, you know, they laugh because they realize. You know, you find a woman at a bar or a club, and then you're surprised that she's a base and worldly woman. You know, if you get your lunch from the bottom of a dumpster, are you going to be surprised if maybe it's got bugs crawling on it? They keep doing foolish things, and then, why didn't life work for me? Stop walking in ignorant paths. I think I know. I had a friend of mine, so many times. You know, well, I want to make my own mistakes. And he is. Everybody's on a path. What path are you on? Is your path leading to where you want to be? Young people, one of the beautiful things about being a young person is you're so early on in your path choice that you can choose magnificent things. But you gotta choose the right paths. Sometimes older people will look back and we can make some corrections in our life, but there's some things we can't go back and reverse because those decisions were way back there. We can do what we can now, but those decisions were way back there. As a young person, you get to choose now, what path am I going to be on? And sometimes young people don't connect very much where I want to get to with where I'm at now. There's a young man in Pennsylvania. He's still incarcerated. Has been for years. I believe he still is. When he was 15, I tried to work with him. And I told him, I said, Aaron, where do you want to be when you're 25? And right now he's about 25. I said, would you, like to have a house? Yeah. What kind of house would you like? I like a big house out in the country. Okay. What else do you want to have? I like a dog. Okay. Some guns. Okay. What else? What about a wife? Yeah, I'd like a pretty wife. Okay. All right. You want her to be honest and good? Yeah. You want to be able to trust her? Oh, yeah. How about your kids? What do you want them to behave like? You know, or do you want them to be respectful and behave? Oh, yeah, I want them to behave. I said, okay, these are good things. I said, what do you want to be? He said he wanted to be a scientist that studied bugs. I said, all right,
Here's the problem. Those are nice goals, but the path that you're on doesn't go there. If you want to get those things when you're 25, you can't be doing these things now. It doesn't go there. And I said, if you don't change what you're doing now, if you don't get control of yourself, society is going to take control of you and lock you away. And he said, that's what everybody tells me. And he's been in prison now for many, many years. Think about the paths that you're on. In choice of a spouse. You don't have to get married. Paul did wonderful things as a single person. And he recommended advantages to that. Other people choose to get married. If you're going to get married, what kind of a marriage do you want to have? Be choosing now. He's like, well, I don't know who I'm going to marry. Be choosing what kind of person you want to marry. I mean, don't get, she has to have this color of auburn hair and this color of green eyes. That's not what I mean. Be deciding what you're looking for. And guess what, young people? You have already started building your home. Do you realize that? If you're going to have a home, you've already started building. Young men, you're building the husband and father right now. Aren't you? Young ladies, you're building the wife and mother of that home right now. If you're going to build a house, men, those of you that build a house, you start with a foundation, right? Do you want to start with defective timbers? Is that what, you want to start with termite-ridden stuff? No, you want to start with something solid. You're building yourself now. Whether you choose to get married or not, you're building yourself now for who you're going to be later. Do a good job. Choose good paths. Let the Word of God. Do you think God knows more about you? There's a few times that you're going to know more than your parents. Not as many as you think. But there's a few times you will. I've illustrated that point to kids along this line. And I'm really going to wind up here in a minute, but I want to get these last few points in. I remember talking to this one young man, the one that, I want to make my own mistakes. And he's done something like shot himself in the leg and different accidents and all these different things. And I said, take what you know right now. You know, you think you know a lot at, say, age 17. 2 years from now, do you think you'll know less or more? More. Okay, good, good. How about 2 years past that? Will you have forgotten everything? Will you know even more? Well, yeah, I'll know even more. Okay, good. All right, when you're 25, yeah, I'll know more. How about 5 more years? Yeah, I'll know more. How about 35? Yeah, I'll know more. And then I get to one, I said, your parents are already there. You know, because they already know more. Make good choices. Pick out who you want to be. Be that person before God. Pick out, don't pick out the woman of Proverbs 7. Choose somebody who wants to be the woman of Proverbs 31. Choose together which kind of children you want to have. And remember, love. We talked about this on Sunday. Sometimes guys say, oh, I love her. I love her. What do you love about her? I love that I get this, and I see this, and I get this, and I see that, and I get, me. That's why I love her, because what I get. God so loved that he gave. Let's take, suppose, fellas, that you're just in love with this girl. And you said, oh, I want to marry her. And she said, yes, and I'm in love with her. I'm crazy about her. I'm in love with her. A week before the wedding, she's in a terrible accident. Industrial accident, traffic accident, chemical accident. And her face is badly burned. Still going to get married? Or did that love kind of change? It's like, why? I kind of like the way her hair was. And I, what happened to all that? I love her. Now, it would be a challenging decision for people to make at that point. But you see what I'm saying?
love is not just what I get. Love is I'm interested in what's good for this person. Love is not primarily a selfish thing. Love should be a self-giving thing. And we've talked about it already, building family. And whether you get married or not, whether you choose to have children or not, choose this, that you're going to serve the Lord. Ecclesiastes says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the days come when the gates of the house begin to tremble and the grinders are few and they that, you know, you rise at the calling of a bird or a grasshopper or whatever. Before those days come, choose what to do. And the end of the matter has been heard. Fear God. Keep His commandments. I've gone over time, but thank you for your attention. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you this week. And if anyone needs to respond to the gospel invitation, won't you do so as we stand and sing?